Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name is Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my business partner, Chris Rocchio.
What's happening?
Also my husband. Yeah. Can't forget that one.
Yeah, I guess it goes in the last part of the description.
Anyways, before we get into today's episode, Chris wanted to read a 5-star review from one of our listeners.
Yeah, this one's titled Great Presentation of Great Info by Strong is Beautiful. I've been following Amanda for years and have loved her reasonable approach to food, wellness, and food prep. I was so happy when this podcast came out and have really enjoyed the content that Amanda and Chris present. I appreciate how they will discuss the studies and research behind most of the topics, but still present the information in a way that is approachable, yet respects that none of this is black or white or all or none. Keep it coming, and thanks for what you do. Many recipes and food preps I have done have been inspired by you.
Thank you so much for that lovely review. If you guys could take a moment to leave a review, it would mean so much to Chris and I. It really helps support us on our journey and helps support our podcast.
Indeed.
Getting into today's episode, we're talking through some of the things that might be getting in the way of your goals. So whether your goal is fat loss or muscle gain, these are some of the different things that could be getting in your way. And honestly, this could apply to some of your other goals, but especially any of your, fitness, health, nutrition goals.
Yeah, I think with the exception of maybe one or two, I think a lot of them apply to, say, a personal goal that is completely outside of the realm of fitness and health and stuff like that. So this is much more applicable outside of the fitness realm than we initially started. So that's great. But we're going to be covering certain things like chronic stress, self-sabotage, your social group. So maybe some things that you have anticipated or you may anticipate after reading this title and some things that you may not have thought of. So just starting it right off, we're going to start with chronic stress. And because we think this is a really important one, and it's a lot of things that people overlook, especially people who maybe have everything else on point, right? And, they have their diet on point, they have their workout, seemingly have their schedule. But what if you're stressing out about, what if you're that type A kind of person who needs everything to be in control? And when it's not, then you're stressing out about that. I mean, you have money, relationships, school, work, social media, politics, family or friend problems, like anything. We're in the middle of a pandemic. So you have these things where, like, people are out of work. So, I mean, and some of these things are way more justified in terms of stress than others. You know, we stress out about a lot of petty things, but some of us have real problems that persist. And if they're petty, then it's easier to work on those coping mechanisms and you can, get over that. But if it's something that is continuous, then you really, and you can't get away from it, you can't eliminate that out of your life, then there has to be a different way that you manage it. Otherwise, you're just dealing with this heightened levels of cortisol, which we'll get into about why that's affecting you. We talked about in a previous episode, you talked about the difference between acute and chronic stress.
Right. Acute is, short term. That can be super healthy. Like, you have, a project deadline, you finish the project, and then, the stress is gone. Or even like some beneficial stress from, like, your body goes through from working out. So all of that'd be acute stress. And then chronic stress is more long term. It's ongoing. You don't really have much of a break. Maybe something's lingering over your head and you just cannot find a way to escape these negative thoughts. That would be more chronic stress.
Yeah, and when we're constantly stressed out, you produce a lot of cortisol. And like she said, cortisol can be beneficial. It's good to get us motivated in the morning and give us drive in the workout. But when that acute stress never stops, we just have one thing stressing us out after another, and then it's just one constant cycle, that's when it's going to start inhibiting both fat loss and muscle gain. So we can start with fat loss because it's a little bit more in terms of the chemistry behind it. We wanted to break it down, but I want to try to keep it as simple as possible. So first off, when there's too much cortisol in your blood, other hormones and processes take a back seat. We won't go through the whole list, but there are things like you're not in the parasympathetic nervous system, which affects your digestion and how well you absorb nutrients and all that kind of stuff. And then your thyroid hormone is also affected, which plays a huge role in metabolism. So you're first off, you're blunting certain effects and functions like that, right? Before we get into the next breakdown, I want you to understand a couple of things. So both adrenaline and cortisol are released in response to a perceived stress. Okay. And adrenaline plays a role in releasing energy from fat cells to be burned. So in a normal physical fight or flight situation, the stressful event is quickly resolved, whether or not, you know, you fight or you flee. That, regardless, it's a burst of energy. And because you have the increased stimulation from a pounding heart, that circulation helps the cortisol to be absorbed and effectively dissipated in the system and all as well. However, when there's a lot of cortisol present for a long period of time, that excess cortisol stimulates glucose production and releases it into blood to get ready for a fight or flight. But when there's no physical fight or flight situation, you don't burn that, right? And like we said, these responses were only meant to last only a few moments, not all day, every day. So what happens is your body will store the excess sugar, because you didn't burn it, into your fat cells, and thus causing weight gain. And so that's one part of the cycle. And on the other side, in terms of burning fat, in order for your body to burn fat, essentially, is that it has to release the energy from fat cells in order to be burned, okay? And this is hard to do when there's too much cortisol in the system and in the cells. And so remember when I told you that adrenaline plays a role in releasing energy from fat cells to be burned? So the presence of too much adrenaline for too long can cause fat cells to be resistant to it, okay? So when that happens, it's no longer playing a role in helping releasing that fat from the cell. So the problem is that you still have the net result of the high stress causing the production of glucose and its storage as fat, but you no longer have the triggering of the release of the fat. So I hope that I broke that down as simple as possible, because it's a pretty complex subject. I don't know. Do you think that's sufficient, Amanda? Because you usually like things to be dumbed down. Is that good for you?
No, that makes sense overall. Absolutely. I mean, and from all that, it's not good.
Right. But I also think it's important to talk about the role of insulin with this, because not only does it help glucose get from the blood into the cells, but it also helps shuttle fat from the blood into storage. Okay. And so when insulin is high, the fat will not be released from the cell in order to be burned for energy. So in short, insulin blocks the release of fat and also helps store it. So don't spike your insulin all day if you're trying to lose weight. That's another thing to keep in mind.
Right. I mean, and it kind of makes sense, like biologically, like, look, when you were stressed out, right, it was like an animal was coming after you or whatever.
Right.
So it releases glucose in your blood. So you had a quick source of energy, right? There's the bear across the field. You're like, I got to get the F out of here. So you run and you have that extra glucose and you get out of there, you burn some fuel and you're good to go. Stress is over. You're in your cave with the family. I'm sure that's exactly how it went.
Right.
But that, you know, that makes sense to me overall. That's kind of how I pictured it. Which again, isn't an issue overall if it's, you know, here and there, but like we talked about, the chronic long-term stress is absolutely an issue. And also, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I'm stressed out, it can also increase my cravings. So finding healthy ways to relieve stress will help you also not maybe go towards food if that's one of your coping mechanisms for stress. So that again can inhibit some of your goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one other thing we don't have to spend as much time in is just muscle gain. And most of you guys who are trying to gain muscle, or you gals who are, you know, bodybuilders are trying to, you know, build that booty, you know, at least the bare minimum of like muscle gain is the net result of, you know, the balance between muscle protein breakdown and muscle protein synthesis, right? And chronically increased levels of cortisol can induce muscle protein breakdown. And when that is higher than muscle protein synthesis, you just won't grow. And so there's a bunch of things that are going to increase your cortisol. Like if you work out too often, too much, your volume is too high, you keep intensity high while volume is high, you know, and you don't balance the two. So when we talk about intensity, we're talking about the weight you're lifting in relation to your maximum lift. So what you can do as a one rep max. And so a lot of people who will, you know, say if you're young and you have a lot of energy, okay, so you go in and you want to max out, or you want to do your set of like five sets of five of a big lift, but then you want to continue working out for another hour and a half, 2 hours after that, because you have the energy for it. But just because you have the energy for it doesn't mean that you should continue working out.
Right.
You know, or just because you're on a huge kick and you worked out the last 6 days doesn't mean you need to work out the seventh day just because you feel good that day. You can give yourself a rest, and sometimes it's absolutely needed. And so when you're talking about overtraining or lack of recovery, things like that, that is one of the huge things, and which actually brings us to the next step, which would be lack of sleep.
Is this what you're going to focus on, Chris?
Hey, I've been a little bit better. I've been correcting it lately.
Yeah, so you went to sleep with me the past few nights, actually.
I've been trying to a little bit. At least, I mean, it's not as early as I want to. I want to get into bed before 10, but it's been more like a little bit before 11.
No, you're doing good. I'm proud of you.
Oh, thank you. But you know, we had a long episode on sleep. I think it was episode 19, so you should check that out.
I know, we bring it up in almost every episode. The hormonal one, like a few others.
Yeah, we just want to cover some bullet points here and maybe just go over the basics. So, you know, sleep deprivation can cause changes to your hormones that regulate hunger and appetite. So you have the hormone leptin that suppresses appetite and encourages the body to expend energy. But sleep deprivation reduces leptin. And then you have the hormone ghrelin, on the other hand, which triggers feelings of hunger, and ghrelin goes up when you're short on sleep. And then not only that, but you can be as insulin resistant as a type 2 diabetic after one night of poor sleep. We've talked about that several times.
That always blows me away, though.
Right. Yeah. And it reminds me every time I want to stay up late, for sure, because I'm definitely capable of it. And it also causes more cravings of sugar-rich foods for quick mental energy. I know when I'm tired, you know, whether I've worked a long day on my feet or whether I'm just up late at night and I'm just really battling going to sleep because I'm just not feeling tired, even though I'm telling myself I'm not tired, but I'm immediately going to the kitchen for sweets and basically the things that I'm telling everybody not to eat
late at night,
chocolate chips, all that stuff. But I'm not doing it
out of like craving. You're doing it more of like your body needs that quick energy because you're tired.
Yeah, it's almost like it's happening subconsciously.
Yeah.
Like my brain is, my body's turned into a zombie. My brain has one freaking function going on right now, and it's just saying one word, food, over and over again, and I'm repeating that in a mantra. And I, you know, even though there is protein in there, there's hard-boiled eggs ready, and I just immediately go after the sugar, you know. And it's still, you know, sometimes it's still the healthy stuff. I'll get a handful of goji berries, or three handfuls of goji berries, something like that. But nonetheless, there's no calculation in that decision whatsoever.
Right.
And it's because my brain is tired and it's telling me, go get sugar, because if you want to keep operating, then I need energy to operate.
Yeah.
And another important thing is that you recover from your workouts while you sleep. And so not only are your muscles not repairing, but you're insulin resistant, so you're not dealing with sugar and thus burning fat properly. It's just a whole slew of things that are going wrong with your hormones, and because those are the things sending signals and pretty much telling your body to operate properly. Your hormones are completely thrown off with lack of sleep. So yeah, it just puts you in that deficit, and it's a vicious cycle to recover from.
Don't skip on sleep, kids.
And what's really important with this is something called sleep variability. So you don't want to have what's called a high sleep variability. And basically what this means is that ideally you want to get the same amount of sleep per night and also stay within the same sleep pattern in terms of going to bed and waking up the same day. So you're trying to sync your circadian rhythm up with the sunrise and the sunset, ideally. And then so that's a huge thing. And there's also studies to show that a low sleep variability will play a huge role in terms of optimizing your recovery and muscle gain, fat loss, you know, and all the things under that category.
Right. So go to sleep at the same time and wake up at the same time as much as possible every night. And yeah, try to sync it up with the sunset and sunrise.
Yeah. And then what we also, in that episode 19, we talk about some nice steps that you can do before you go to bed, say, you know, from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock to start prepping yourself. You know, start unplugging from the computer, you know, unplugging from screens and, you know, read a book. We're not going to go through all that. You should check that episode out.
Maybe watch some anime with your husband.
Yeah.
That's our new thing. Yeah. A little bit of anime at night, and then I read right before bed. But I need to get back on. Usually I switch to reading more like fictional books at night.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have any. We're staying at my parents' condo. They're not there. They're stuck in Cincinnati with quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been nice to stay there just to switch it up because, you know, we're stuck at home right now.
Right.
But so I don't have any of my fictional books on me. So I was reading this educational book and it put me to sleep right away. Like I just, yeah. I love educational books. I try to read a lot. You know, we read a lot for our podcast guests coming on, but at night, like, I mean, I guess it's a good thing because I'll read one page and I'll be like, totally out. Like I'm 20 pages in this book, like 2 weeks later.
No, I mean, I guess boredom is a great way to fall asleep. Yeah, you can just bore the shit out of yourself and then just like, before you know it, you're waking up.
I'm like literally looking at this book though. And I'm like, wow, I read a page a night.
No, there's been those times where I'm trying to read something like super heady late at night, you know, and then I read the same paragraph like 3 or 4 times and it's like, I gotta go to sleep.
Hey, you know, that might be a tactic. It might work better than counting sheep. What do you know? So getting into number 3 on our list, and that's lack of social support. So you know what we're talking about, whether it's friends or family, you know, so you're starting something new, right? You're starting a new health goal, you're starting a new work goal, whatever, and your friends and family maybe don't support you. Maybe there's some friends that are actually borderline sabotaging you. So that could be anything from making fun of you, you know, maybe because they're jealous, or you going through that activity is reminding them that they're, you know, in their minds not productive enough, which totally you're not doing anything wrong. Keep at what you're doing. You know, sometimes there's just that friend or two. Now, obviously, first step for handling friends and family that seem to be almost sabotaging your goal or getting in your way is to have a talk with them. So, you know, a nice discussion, or if it continues, like a very stern talk, because I know that's not really fair. You know, if you're really trying to make a positive change, it's not really appropriate for any of your friends and family to be making fun of you or getting in your way. Maybe they don't even know they're doing it, like they're trying to be lighthearted, but it really bothers you. So don't be afraid to have that discussion, to have that stern talk. And then honestly, if they continue that behavior, it'd be something to consider if maybe taking a step back from that friend. Because if that friend is not there celebrating you, celebrating that you're trying to be a healthy, better person, then I'd question whether you need that friend in your life as much as you think you do.
Yeah, I'm not all about advocating cutting people off that you really care about and that you know care about you, because that's like one of the
It's tough.
Well, not only that, but it's also one of the characteristics of being in a cult, you know, like cutting off anybody that doesn't feed into the ideology, right, and the belief system of the cult, right?
True.
And so you don't want, but if it's kind of analyzing whether or not this person is counterproductive to your goals,
yeah,
you know, and the net addition to your life is just pure negative.
Absolutely.
Right. And so, I mean, we're not telling you to cut ties with friends and family that mean something to you, but it's really an analyzation of certain toxic individuals. Like, I have friends that I hung out with in my 20s. I don't know if you guys have been listening to us since the beginning, but I talked about my transition, because my 20s, I was not about the health and fitness stuff. Right. So I have friends that I'm still friends with. And when I want to go out and I want to party and want to reach out and things like that, I still hang out with them and I'm not cool. I don't resent them, but I had to take a step back and
create some distance
and surround myself with people that were going to be conducive to that while I was in that, I would say, you know, quote unquote, vulnerable state.
Where
you can be easily tempted towards your older habits, you know, because, you know, whether or not you believe in the it takes you 30 days or it takes you the 60 days or a full 90 to get into a new habit, regardless, it may be different for everybody. But bottom line is there is that transition phase where it's easy to go back into old habits. And so in those situations, it might be good to be like to remove yourself from that. Don't say, hey, I'm never going to talk to you anymore. Just be like, hey, you know, I'm cool on going out to bars for the next month or so. You know, and then, I mean, when I stopped it, I literally was like, I'm not going to drink for 6 months.
Wow.
And then that ended up lasting for like the first year I did it was like 14 months. And then once you start going, you're like, oh, I wonder how long I can go this time without having a drink.
Yeah.
So, you don't have to be that crazy about it. Right. But I'm just saying if there is a drastic change you need to make because you are going from one extreme behavior to at least being normal, and you don't have to switch it over to the opposite extreme behavior, right, but just going back to a healthier place. Exactly.
Yep.
And so like, again, I just wanted to basically say, don't be cultish.
Right.
Don't cut off everybody and say, I can't talk to you because you're not
on the exact
on the same level as me. But, you know, just know that sometimes people can be counterproductive.
Right. Totally. And so that goes through how to kind of create distance if there's more negative relationships in your life. Now, in terms of finding positive ones that support your goals, which hopefully some of your friends and family already are on that path and are supportive of you, even if they're not actually doing those types of things. Mm-hmm. But that would be also a good time to try to meet people online. So, you know, you can join a Facebook group. You can find people on Instagram and start DMing with them. You could even get a coach, those types of things. So you can talk to people that can relate to your struggle. They made that transition at some point in life, and they'll be like, oh man, you know, those first few days, those first few weeks were really hard. You know, I went through this and that, you know, here's some advice I can give you. And, you know, just also seeing that maybe they're a little bit further in that goal than you are, and like seeing them as motivation. So, you know, we're lucky. This is where social media and online communities definitely have their perks, especially now that we can't meet with people in person. And once we can start meeting people in person again, you can add back in like local communities or like making friends at the gym, making friends at a workout class. Those are also some good options for adding some more positive influence in your life.
Yeah. And even with us, with our Beach Tribe workout crew. So like in comparison, when I first moved out to LA in 2006, my first time, I moved out here with a whole bunch of my buddies who were in a band. And so there's a lot of partying involved. And then my other side of friends were people in the film and music industry that I was working with. And then so these are not the healthiest individuals because we work 12 to 14 hour days. And, you know, like it's a lot of stress. And so when we get off, you know, they're drinking while we're doing those road projects and things like that. So it's not the healthiest industry to be employed in. And so my first time around, the people I was surrounding myself with definitely weren't conducive to this lifestyle. And then I moved back out here the second time in 2014 after being in St. Louis and did some grad school in the Netherlands. But and then I came back out, and one of the first things we did after, you know, getting a job at Beachbody and meeting some people here is that Amanda and I started going down. And this is when we were still friends, right? We were not dating yet.
Just friends.
And then so we started going down to the beach. We get a handful of people from Beachbody, and we just be like, hey, let's go do a beach workout just to get out in the sun. And then the people that we met down there at the beach just randomly, who like came up, saw what we were doing, like, hey, can we join? Some of them are core members of our crew now.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, to add to that, I met so many great people through Instagram. So
right.
That's another like a lot of great friends, actually.
yeah. So it's more just gravitating towards people that are in your world and, you know, making an effort to reach out to them, even though maybe outside of your social circle, just like extend the fitness world or whatever you want to try to do, and just try to make those people part of your personal life and your personal circle.
Absolutely. And I mean, there is a thing like the law of attraction is very much true. So once you're on that path, once you're getting going, you'll find that you'll attract those types of people. So that's definitely happened to me, you know, after being on this journey for a long time. The more and more like health, fitness, you know, different types of gurus I've definitely attracted. So it's great. It's a great community online. Don't be afraid to share the things, the changes you're making. If you share those out on social media, I think you'll attract the types of people that you really want to connect with and get some ideas from, and just all around good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
So number four on our list is the all or nothing mentality, which is very similar to perfectionism. So I say those two are very similar mentalities.
Mm-hmm.
And we want you to get away from this mentality. So when you go to start something new, the reality is you're not going to be great at first, right? Like when you first go to learn an instrument, like you're going to suck. Same thing with your health and fitness goals. But for some reason, I think people feel like they have to be perfect when they start their health and fitness journey, which doesn't make sense to me. Like, you know, we're all beginners at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
What a simple concept.
So profound, Amanda.
No, but really, look, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have setbacks. That's normal. Anticipate that. And use the setbacks as like a way to learn, right? Like this mm-hmm. set me back. Like, how can I work around this? How can I prevent that from setting me back in the future? I actually really like Sohee's analogy. She was on one of our previous podcasts where she said, you know, if you had a flat tire, you wouldn't go ahead and slash the other three, right? You're flat. You're still going to try to drive home with three full tires and a flat tire if you have no replacement. Yet, you know, with our health and fitness goals, we're like, well, I ate that donut, I got to eat the whole pizza. You know, I think it does come from a feeling of guilt. Maybe that's part of it. But we definitely have that mentality like, oh, I had some candy. All right. The whole day is ruined. Mm-hmm. Same thing with fitness. You know, sometimes we're like, well, we only have 5-10 minutes, man, do some sprints, get a walk in. It's okay. You don't need to do the full 30 minutes, hour every day. So let's get away from this all or nothing perfectionism mentality. I don't know about you, Chris. Do you think you apply that to any other areas in your life right now?
Oh, shit.
I just put you on the spot, didn't I?
You did put me on the spot.
Actually, I'm just going to say that sometimes I feel like he applies that to our podcast episodes because he really wants them. He wants them to be good for you guys. You know, like he wants the research to be good. He doesn't want to waste your time.
We actually had that problem today is that we had a topic we started before this one. We were going to bang out a couple podcasts. And we started it and I was like, this isn't going to work. And we got so angry. We're like kind of got in a fight about it because there was some research that went into it, some small research, but research nonetheless. And I was like, this is not going to be a interesting subject. I would not listen to this podcast. And so, I mean, that might get in the way a little bit. I mean, I know that, you know, a buddy of mine has always said, the great is the enemy of the good.
Right.
And yes. I've always loved that because say you're an artist and you have a great project or a musical artist and you have this great song you're working on and it's amazing and you keep going back to it and you keep saying it can be better, it can be better. But you don't know how it can be better. You just think it can be better. And you never release it. You never record it and put it on a track to release it to people. And it never sees the light of day because you're sitting there kind of just paralyzed by overanalyzation.
Yeah.
Right? Paralysis by analysis, right?
I think I have the opposite problem though. I'm such a get it done person. Like I'll get it done and it'll be sloppy. And sometimes it'll be too sloppy. Mm-hmm. This is why Chris and I do balance each other out pretty well because I'm like, let's get it done. And sometimes it's a little sloppy. And he's like, this is a little too sloppy. Like we got to rein this in. We need to aim a little higher.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you should see it. I mean, every time we're getting ready for these podcasts, I have just pages and pages of research and she's like, just rein it in and let's do the podcast. Like just wrap it up, you know? And I think it's a great thing. It's a great balance for sure.
Right. Well, you know what? You can do that for yourself, you know, balance yourself and be kind and compassionate to yourself when you're starting something new.
Because in this situation, Amanda and I haven't proved to be self-sufficient on our own. So we balance each other out. Find somebody like that. If you don't have a significant other that balances you out, have a friend that you trust to be like, hey, I want you to analyze this. I want you to be a critic where you constructively criticize me when I need it, but also criticize me when I'm being over analytical and be like, okay, this is good. You need to put it out, you know, something like that.
Yep.
I mean, this has wide applications and I don't want to get too specific, but I think it's one of the most important things on the list.
Absolutely.
So next up, number 5 on the list is if you have a goal, but you don't have a plan.
So, you know, like for example, your goal is to lose weight or to gain muscle. Well, that's a goal, but what is your actual plan? So you really want to get detailed with your plan. Write down a list of action steps, whether you want to take some of those steps daily or weekly. Schedule time on your calendar for some of these activities that support your goal, especially starting out. So, you know, obviously for weight loss, like maybe when are you going to go grocery shopping? How are you going to set up your kitchen? How are you going to plan out your meals? So that's something you could do for weight loss. Same thing with getting on like a workout plan. So really making sure you have that written out and also make sure it's achievable for you, right? So don't aim maybe too high in the beginning, like start small. And you can slowly make those changes over time. So like maybe you have a really big goal and there's a bunch of changes you want to make, maybe figure out what changes at first would really be the most applicable and easiest to achieve.
Right.
So, I mean, it's pretty simple.
Yeah. I mean, I also think it's important to, because a lot of people fail in their goal setting and this kind of applies because it's easy to have a goal. I want to lose weight or I want to gain muscle. Right. But since we're saying that this applies to other things in life, you know, say this is a goal that you have in terms of your career ambitions or, you know, an entrepreneurship or whatever. So a lot of people have unspecified goals. Like say your goal is, I want to be a millionaire. Well, what's your plan there, right? Like, do you have anything in that goal other than that you want to make a certain amount of money, you know? And so when I think a lot of times people fail to line out a specific goal, because like you said, one thing that's important is first and foremost setting an achievable goal.
Right.
But tied into that is to make sure that it is specified to where you can actually have, say, a grade at the end. Did I pass or fail this goal? Did I succeed or not?
Right.
You know, there's some psychology in there about not specifying a goal. You know, because if you don't specify it, you never have to accept the fact of failing.
Yeah.
If you don't reach it.
I also think if you can tie into why you want to achieve that goal and get deeper, you know, deeper there, like, why do you want to lose weight? Because you're going to feel better overall. You know, you're going to have more confidence, like a few other things, your energy levels. And you can also have like smaller goals within your big goal, like mm-hmm. especially if you have a big business goal. What are some small goals you want to achieve along the way, which could help you write out that plan within those small goals?
Right. I mean, going back to our initial vague example of like, I want to be a millionaire. Well, there are short-term, intermediate, and long-term goals within that larger goal that you need to fulfill. So it's kind of like you need to line all of those steps out as a specific, or I'm sorry, as a separate goal within the larger, the micro within the macro, you know? And so, you know, we're kind of starting to get into concept creep from the initial thing, but we thought it's important to discuss that.
Absolutely. And honestly, if you haven't done this already, write it down. So, I mean, whether that's in your notes on your phone, that's fine, on a piece of paper, because even the act of writing down your goal makes you more likely to achieve that goal. So yeah. Do that and then write on your to-do list to make a plan mm-hmm. and make that damn plan.
Right, right. So number six on the list is workout variation or lack thereof. And so there's two sides of this. So obviously there's the monotone approach and be like, oh, I want to do the same thing week in and week out because I need to work on my bench. I need to work on my squat. I need to work on my deadlift. And so you just go in and day out and work on those three lifts. But what if there's a weakness involved in that, right? And we'll talk about weaknesses later because that's another part. But, you know, what if you're at a plateau in that and then you can do some side accessory work that would help strengthen your weaknesses to overall increase your overall lift in a way that you could not do if you were just doing the same workout. Say you're just doing the same 5x5 squat, deadlift, and bench workout and you were plateauing. So it's kind of like that, or maybe even the fact that just like you're just getting burnt out on your workout because you just keep doing the same thing and it's just boring. Change it up, create some variety. Start looking around and seeing what other people are doing and you know, just make it fun for yourself, because it's not fun, you're not going to be motivated to do it.
Right.
And then on the other side of things, and this is one that we talked about in Zoe's podcast too, is changing up your workout too much.
Right.
And I think that that's a huge problem because you want to be able to track your progress. I mean, especially if your goal is to gain muscle or just to get stronger in general, you want to see where you were at before. So how are you able to see your progress, or how are you able to see whether or not, because tied into this is the concept of progressive overload. So how are you going to get stronger or bigger if you're not doing a workout that in which you can compare your results of this workout to the last time you worked this specific group? Say for instance, like, oh, well, this week I'm doing chest, but I do flat bench, and the next week I do incline bench, and the next week I start with decline. Well, you don't know whether or not you're progressively overloading because you have no apples to apples comparison. So like, for instance, with progressive overload, what we are referring to is, say I do five sets of five of 225 bench this week. Next week, I will either want to increase the reps, increase the weight, or increase the number of sets I do. And so if like I'm increasing the number of sets or reps, I keep the weight the same. Or if I keep the reps the same, it's reps and sets the same, I want to increase the weight. So no matter what, you're increasing something while keeping everything else the same. And so that's how you overload. Well, you can't do that unless you're doing the same workout. So give yourself a program, stay with it for 4 weeks. And, you know, you can add, that's actually could be part of the progressive overload, is just adding a movement. Say you do one thing for 2 weeks, and then, you know, for the next 2 weeks, you just add one more exercise, and that's how you add variety before you move up to a next one. There's a million ways that you can do this, but the number one thing is that if you program hop, you're never really going to see that strength and muscle progress, and there's no way of tracking.
Right. And you could also build in some type of flex day for yourself. If you really, if you're like me and you need a little more variety, you know, I'll build in a flex cardio day, and like, you know, mm-hmm. I'll do some stairs, or I'll do a dance workout, or, you know, I'll bounce up and down on the trampoline. So, yeah. You know, building in a flex day, or just knowing yourself and knowing what you really like more, you know, caters to that. And then, but making sure you're covering your bases. So if you're a runner and you love to run, great, do that. But then, you know, make sure you're getting some strength days in, and try to find maybe strength training you like more.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so number seven on the list is not adding variety to the diet. And so that's the same approach, essentially.
Right. I mean, same thing where you can either have too much variety and you're not going to stick to the plan because you got to be cooking all the time, mm-hmm. or you can have too little variety, which will lead you to being bored. Or, you know, you also won't be getting like a lot of the different nutrients and vitamins and minerals that you would if you have a varied diet. Mm-hmm. So my tip on that would be to switch it up basically on a weekly basis, especially when you're meal prepping. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm a big fan of the meal prep, and typically what I do is I'll cook, you know, pretty much the same thing every day just because it's easy from a cooking standpoint and I don't spend as much time in the kitchen. So I'll bulk cook a bunch of things on Sunday, Monday, and that will be good for 5 days. And then I'll cook as I go on the weekend just to switch it up. And then the next week, you know, I'll switch up my diet quite a bit. Sometimes I'll keep some of the same things, but I do try to switch up some of the meals as much as possible. You know, this keeps me from getting bored. You know, I get to try new recipes almost every week, but also I don't spend a crap ton of time in the kitchen trying to make, you know, something crazy new every single day.
Yeah, I know when I first started meal prepping, it was a lot easier to just be fine with the same stuff day in and day out. And then, I mean, after months and months, you just start getting really tired of it.
Right.
You know? And then so like I went to the exact opposite. It was like, okay, I'm only going to be prepping my lunches, and now I'm going to cook everything from scratch. Well, then I have a time deficit. So now I'm like behind in the morning, and, you know, I'm not having as much time to do research or read or chill because I'm prepping everything individually. Like I have a different meal for every day of the week for dinner. And so just for some reason that there's a little bit of a sacrifice in terms of time with that. So I think that's a really important one.
Well, also everyone is different, so you got to find what works for you. Another tip I used to do was I would also do the same meals Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then mm-hmm. Tuesday, Thursday, I'd do something different. So that's a nice way to break it up where you have a little more variety, but you still don't spend too much time in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mean, if you do plan it out well, like maybe let's just say you have the same breakfast and lunch every week, you write that out, but your dinners, you want them to be really different. Then you could plan that out. But again, it will take more time planning and all of that. But just a few options for you there. But yeah.
All right. So number eight on our list is going to be replacing food with supplements or relying on supplements. And I think this is really important because a lot of people, especially when you're trying to get your protein up, you can end up having like too many protein shakes in the day. And you think that just as long as you're getting your grams of protein, then however you get it, it is going to be acceptable, right? But you know, you could run into problems of like, say you're doing 4 whey protein shakes a day. What if you become intolerant to whey, which is a huge problem?
It's a lot of whey protein.
Right? Well, I know I used to do it back in the day when I was in high school and college, right?
Wow.
And so, so it's not out of the question. People are a little bit smarter than the information is out there to kind of like skew people away from that. But yeah, there's still a lot of people who rely on protein shakes to get their grams of protein in the day. Or there's people that will think that, oh, well, if I just take a cortisol reduction supplement, then I'm going to reduce my cortisol.
Yeah, so I don't have to do any stress management at all.
Yeah,
I
just take some ashwagandha and that'll reduce my cortisol, right? So there's a long list of things. Obviously, there's a huge list of supplements and they all have different touted benefits or whatever. And you just can't rely on them completely. The best option is to eat whole foods and supplements are just that. They supplement an already existing proper diet, ideally.
Right, right. There's no hack to getting fit. There's no hack to getting healthy. There's things that support you on the way. There's things that can give you like an extra, I'd say boost. Some people don't like that word, but I think an extra boost.
An edge. Yeah.
An edge, but they don't replace a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm a huge proponent of supplements. I think it's definitely important, especially if you want to optimize. You don't absolutely need them. But in certain circumstances you do, if you're training, if you have a vegan diet or a vegetarian diet, I think it's important, but I really don't think that, that you should revolve your training and your diet around that.
Absolutely. And yeah, exactly. Like protein shake can be a nice snack. It can be a nice way to add some more protein to your diet, but it like shouldn't be the like main way you're getting your grams of protein in for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So number 9 on the list is just really being in a bad environment. So whether that's your home environment, your work environment, your gym environment. So a bad environment can absolutely get in the way of your goals. So let's talk through some of that and maybe how you could change it up. So we'll start with maybe the kitchen. The kitchen and your pantry is really, you know, something you could change. And it could be stocked with too much junk food, or there's certain food that really triggers you and you just go off the rails right now, which at some point we'd hope you get to a better place with those types of food. But we understand when you're first starting off, it might be easier to either just remove the temptation, or if you have like a husband or kids who really like that food and you can't really get it rid of it from your house, you can put it in like a certain drawer or a certain cabinet, which you don't really open that much. So you're not seeing it all the time.
Right.
There's nothing more tempting than, you know, like the candy that they put out at work. Like when you see that candy out, like normally I don't want it. I'm not thinking about it, but just seeing that out on your counter, mm-hmm. it can drive you a little bit like, oh, I need to have that. I mean, same thing at a hotel. Like if there's food or drinks that are just out in your space, you know, that would be something to go ahead and like put away in the drawer so you don't see it, you know, on an ongoing basis. And then there you go. The cue is gone. So that's when it comes to food. Now, when it comes to working out at home, which I think a lot of us are doing right now during quarantine, is maybe setting up a space that has less distractions. I know, like, I used to go to the gym in the morning, right? So I'd clean up a little, but my space didn't have to be, like, perfect. Now, when I work out at home, I'm like, okay, I really need to set the area I'm working out in, because otherwise I'm going to be, like, putting things away, you know, taking too long a rest in between my workouts. So that kind of helped me, and also just maybe getting some equipment or a few things to set it up so you're a little more motivated in that environment. You're like, okay, this is my workout zone. Or, you know, you can set it up for a couple of things if you don't have a big space. Like, this is my workout and work zone if you need to do that. But also trying to, like, compartmentalize the space to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I usually go to the gym, and so I'm used to that environment. And so now working out at home, so I was like, why don't I just knock out 2 birds with 1 stone, and I can listen to like my news that I want to listen to while I'm working out. But the problem is that I had to shut my computer because I wanted to jump on and follow up like, oh, is that real? And then so I get on the internet and I try to like follow up. I'm like, wait, this is too long of a rest in my set. And I just had to shut my computer. That lasted all of like half a day because I just realized that too many distractions were happening in the middle of my workout. And so you just got to prioritize. And so so that was one of my main things, is that I think at home you just have way more temptation to try to do something in between, right? Oh, let me go switch the laundry out really quick in between the set, and just that stuff just piles on and you're just not as focused, and you just end up not getting as good of a workout. So I think that's a huge thing. And then tagged on to that is an unmotivating gym environment in general. So
Chris is just saying this because he did not like the old gym I used to work at.
Oh man.
Like I tried to get him to go with me to the gym. I was like, babe, you know, because they kind of let me bring whoever I wanted pretty easily, and I was like, come work out with me, like it'll be fun and we'll have a little date. And he was like, this is the most unmotivating gym, like no one's working out here. They really, like, it was pretty empty. No one was working out. Well, people were on the phone.
I don't mind an empty gym. But what I do mind is when people there are either talking too much or the effort level is just unmotivating, or they're just, I don't know, just the energy level of the people around you is just like, or you say, for instance, I'm sorry to say, but like the girls that are just there to like walk steadily on the treadmill and not break a sweat because they came to the gym 100% fully makeup out, right? And so they don't want to break a sweat. So they're just sitting there like on an incline walk, leaning back, holding onto the rails, leaning backs, which takes away the all of the incline in the walk. So you're just walking steadily. So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you look over and, you know, some guy is having a conversation for 30 minutes in the corner. For some reason, that distracts me. I don't know why I'm not able to stay in my own headspace and stay in the zone. But there's just some places that are just unmotivating. And you look over and there's some guy half repping on the leg press, but he's got the whole thing loaded with every 45 pound weight in the gym, but he's still doing quarter reps. You know, I don't want to even be in that environment because I actually want to say something to the person. It's physically bothering me.
Oh my goodness. Well, good thing I left that gym.
Right. No, absolutely. So for most people, this is not going to be a problem, but if you take your workout seriously and you like your environment to be conducive, to be motivating, to look around and see motivation and with the people that are surrounding you, like in Gold's Gym, that place is motivating. So not only are there people that, you know, that look great, but you look around and people are working hard. In every room, every corner of that room, people are putting in work. And there's something just completely motivating about that.
No, I do love that. I mean, and I think it's important, like, you, either way, you find an environment that's comfortable for you. Because, like, either way, you know, whether that's unmotivating or you don't feel comfortable at your gym, maybe it's better to go to a different gym. I think that's something to consider once gyms reopen again in the future. But so overall on this question, I want you to ask yourself, you know, how am I setting up my environment for success? You know, is there anything getting in the way of my success in my environment that I can control? And then if you can't control the other environments you go to, do what you can, and also maybe consider getting yourself in a completely new environment if that's possible. If that's like a gym or like your workplace is just absolutely driving you nuts, maybe it's time to find, you know, a different job at some point. Mm-hmm. Yada, yada, yada.
Right. And next on the list is just your ego. There's a lot of things tied into this, but, you know, like the first on the list is, you know, you think you know everything. And so people, especially if you've been working out, you've been an athlete your entire life, say if you're a competitor and you're like, oh, well, I've been doing this forever. I've worked with trainers. I work with coaches. Just so you know, like some of the most advanced, skilled athletes out there, even trainers themselves have their own trainers, you know, just to get outside of their own headspace. You don't know everything and you haven't tried everything. And even if you have tried everything, you have emphases on certain things. So you may not specialize in one thing that you should be specializing in your particular field. So I think that's one of the main things, that just assuming that you know everything and assuming that nobody has any value to bring to the table for you.
Right. The know-it-all approach, mm-hmm. as they would call it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another one is not addressing your weaknesses. First and foremost, with the ego, not even acknowledging that you have weaknesses.
Right.
Right. So like one of the main things, like I was talking about before, sometimes people hit plateaus and it's because of a strength imbalance or a weakness in certain things. And all you have to do is just focus on that. And whether you're talking about a physical weakness in your personal life, you have a weakness, there's a chink in your armor that's blocking you from achieving your goals, you know, whether that's an addiction to a certain thing, a specific habit that's blocking you, whatever it is, address it and focus on that and make that the point of focus and really emphasize that until it's no longer a hindrance.
Right. And again, we're talking about weaknesses that are actually getting in the way of your goals, because we're not necessarily suggesting that you focus on that too much, like, you know, with your overall goals, because it is great to focus on your strengths. You know, you can advance really far in life by doubling down on your strengths too, but make sure to not ignore the weaknesses that are getting in your way, that really are, you know, a trouble in your life. Don't forget about those things.
Yeah. So it's important to, you know, keep experimenting. And part of that, you know, you stay humble. You know, assume that, or at least accept the possibility that you may be wrong, and assume that there is always room for growth, because there is, and assume there's always somebody better, because there is. And then so
that's true.
Seriously.
That's very true.
And so that's, you know, a couple things to keep in mind with that is just, you know, get over yourself.
He's saying that to himself too. And I tried to say that to myself.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been constantly saying that. So that was 10 things inhibiting your progress. We wanted to go over some bonus things because they're not really big enough to be their own category, and they kind of loosely fall under a category that I would call self-sabotage. And this is one of these things where it can happen for a variety of reasons, but some of the main ones is like, oh, you question yourself of why you really need to do this. It's like, am I worthy enough to do this? Like, do I deserve this type of thing? Or should I just fall into, you know, my normal habits because nobody expects me to do otherwise.
Right.
Right. Or you have a situation where you're like, say for me, who I like to maintain a specific level of fitness, but I'm no longer playing sports. Right. So like, why do I need this fitness level? Why do I need to work on performance? Right. And so you start questioning your motives and goals, and you start getting this crisis of purpose and really questioning yourself. So, you know, for instance, one of the things that you can do to self-sabotage is just allowing too many distractions. And this it's kind of a willing, it's an active decision, because you know that what you're doing is completely working against your goal and you do it anyway.
Right.
So for instance, like marathoning Netflix when you know you have other shit to do, you know, scrolling through social media, and then you claim you don't have enough time in the day to work out or meal prep or something like that. And so a lot of these things are tied into procrastination.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, we can marathon Netflix, like, and then we can procrastinate. Like, oh, I'll get to that tomorrow. It's like, oh, well, I can start meal prepping tomorrow. And another thing we do in self-sabotage is, especially if you're in the midst of a fitness journey, is too many cheat meals, for instance, mm-hmm. or not timing them properly. So for instance, I like to have my cheat meal as the last meal of the day. So
I call it a treat meal, but Chris stays true to this.
Yeah, no, it's cheat. It's a cheat. But anyway, and then so I like to put it the last meal of the day. So like, I don't spike my insulin, and the rest of the day, I'm just on this insulin roller coaster where I'm craving a huge meal again 3 or 4 hours later. And I end up making shitty decisions the rest of the day. So those are a couple of different reasons. Do you have any examples of self-sabotage?
I think those are the main ones. Yeah, I think the one for me would be like procrastination. And I think this one ties into environment, because you notice yourself like self-sabotaging, like the social media scrolling and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe find little hacks in your environment to set it up a little bit better. Like if first thing you wake up and you're scrolling on social media and like you just do not get off. So you totally sabotage your workout and you have to go straight into work because you spent an hour on social media in the morning. You know, obviously question why, but if you notice yourself doing that, maybe also get an alarm clock in the morning and have your phone outside of the room. So you have to like get up, you have to do all these things, and maybe like check your phone later on if you really can't handle, you know, staying off social media. So I think they kind of tie together. But also, yeah, I think like Chris was saying, if you really question yourself and you think you don't deserve the goal, or you're like worried of judgment or something when you get to that goal, yeah, you might find little ways to like sabotage yourself. So make sure, you know, you're really in alignment with your goal and know that you do deserve it. You are worthy. So
yeah,
steer away from those things. So just to sum up everything we went through today, here are the 11 things that might be getting in the way of your goals. Primarily health and fitness, but any of your other ones too. So one would be chronic stress. 2 would be lack of sleep. 3 would be lack of social support. 4, all or nothing mentality or perfectionism. 5, you have a goal but no plan. 6, you either have no workout variation or you have too much workout variation. 7, same thing with your nutrition. There's either too little or too much variety. 8, you're replacing food with supplements or you're over relying on supplements. 9, you have a bad environment. So you're either not setting up your environment for success or you're putting yourself in bad environments. 10, your ego, or what we would call the know-it-all approach. And then 11, some type of self-sabotage going on.
So that's it. We hope you guys like this list. It's definitely not exhaustive, but we thought these were the most important. And definitely check out the show notes. We don't have too many studies in this because this is kind of a pretty easy and it's pretty general information. But make sure you check out our website. I know we haven't been mentioning that at all, but we do have a website up that has all of our podcasts listed on there with all of the show notes on there and the studies listed. So it's a much easier resource than just looking at it in the podcast app.
Right. And it's masteryourhealth.net. You can check it out there. Chris worked really hard on that website. So shout out to him. Thank you guys for listening to today's episode. We hope you're staying safe. We hope you're staying healthy. And, you know, definitely let us know what else you'd like to see in the future. We'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Yeah. See you.